Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
All right. Welcome to the Viking Age podcast. I'm your host, Adam Patrick, and the lead writer and editor for thevikingage.com, where we cover the Minnesota Vikings. Typically, I'm joined by Chris Shad, but he is busy right now, I believe, covering some entertaining high school basketball in South Dakota. So in his place to help us talk about all the things that the Vikings have been doing in free agency this week is Mr. Thor Nystrom of, I believe, Fantasy Pros right now. He also had a podcast on Score North during the season, and I believe he still makes some appearances on Purple Daily talking about the draft. So welcome, Thor.
Thanks, Adam. Good to be with you. Excited to talk about some Vikings and get out of this cold for a little bit. We had the snow, now we have the rain. You know, we're vacillating between the two, but excited to talk about the Vikings. Been a busy couple weeks for the Vikes.
Yeah, busy last few days. I don't know if people thought they were going to make as many moves as they did, but they've been pleasantly, I would say, pleasantly busy. So we'll just get right into it. So far, the Vikings have signed tight end Josh Oliver. This is new free agents. We'll talk about the retained players in a bit. But so far, the new players that they've signed are tight end Josh Oliver, formerly of the Ravens, pass rusher Marcus Davenport, formerly of the Saints, and cornerback Byron Murphy, formerly of the Cardinals. The Vikings reportedly signed Davenport to a one-year deal worth $13 million, and they reportedly signed Murphy to a two-year deal worth $17.5 million. Now, Chris and I talked about Josh Oliver on Monday, so I kind of wanted to focus more on Davenport and Murphy today. But, you know, looking at these signings, these players, they're not really that old. These are shorter deals. But, you know, what do you believe these signings maybe say about the Vikings' plans for at least the upcoming season?
Yeah, I think on both sides of the ball, you get a clear indication of their plans, both based on the guys that they're moving on from and then the guys that they're bringing in. But the two defensive acquisitions, I think those have Brian Flores' fingerprints all over them. Those and then the guys they got rid of. You know, we expected the thing with Patrick Peterson, right? Because you're going to have way more man responsibilities and being on an island responsibilities with Flores than you were with Ed Donatell. So you assume that Peterson was going to be out the door. The Dantzler one was a little bit more of a surprise, but yep. When you consider the fact that Dantzler is not very good in man coverage, he's more of your silo type, you know, silo in
scout. Was he good in coverage too? Was he good in zone coverage too? Because I don't think
better than in man. We'll put it that way. And obviously he would have been asked to do more man responsibilities with Flores. So it made more sense when you thought about it through that purview. And then talking about the free agent acquisitions, those all seem Flores based as well. Davenport, to me, you know, the book on him coming out was he was a north-south speed to power freight train coming out of UTSA. And the thing that you were wondering about, it's like, do you have the fully fleshed out game? And then if there's an offensive tackle that can anchor against that power, that north-south power and the north-south speed, does he have counter moves and can he get side to side to evade? Those are the things, but you knew that he had that special sauce thing. And you've seen that in the NFL when he's been on the field. 2 years ago, or you know, season before last, 2021, Davenport was awesome in his per snap, whatever. Last year was down just a bit, but you know, on again, off again a little bit. But like the pressure rate has always been there. The thing that fell off last, I think it went from the year before he had what, 9 sacks or
half a sack last year,
something like that. Drops to a half last year, but again, the pressure rate was still there. The pressure rate is the thing that is year to year sustainable. Right. Sometimes those sack numbers jump up, jump down, but the pressure rate's the thing that sustains. So you know he's going to get heat on the quarterback off the edge what you want him doing, it's letting him off the leash to come downhill and attack, attack, attack. That's, we know the Brian Flores is going to do that. That's that's why they went out and got him. It is Marcus. You don't need to worry about the other stuff. We just want you coming downhill and attacking. Mr. Brian Flores is not going to do what Eddie D was doing last year with Danielle Hunter and Zadiri. I saw some, I laughed out loud a couple of the tweets that you had in, you know, January, December about how often Ed Donatell would drop those guys back on third down. You know, it's like, what, Ed, what are
like
you
third
doing?
And two? And he's like, oh, let's drop Danielle back in coverage, you know.
Exactly. And you're not going to see, you're not going to see the same deployment with the edge rushers this year. And that's, you know, that's not what they plan to do with Davenport. Yeah. They're going to let Davenport, it's not situational specific necessarily in that, but it's more just, you have to know the ethos of that guy. It's downhill, downhill, downhill attack. And that's what they're going to be having him do off the edge. So I thought that was a smart signing. Like you mentioned, it's a short-term deal. You're not leveraging yourself going forward. So let's say that it doesn't pan out. He can't, they can't add the, you know, the additional pass rushing moves, whatever the counters, you know, or the agility thing. It just doesn't end up working out. You can move on from after this year. If it works out like gangbusters, you always have the card of we can franchise them or do something like that. Yeah. You still have control over that. So I love that signing. I thought that was a really good one.
Yeah. And Murphy, what do you think he's had? I feel like he's had more success maybe in the slot than on the outside during his career, or he spent more time. Do you think maybe that's what they want to do and maybe have Booth and Evans on the outside kind of trying to do that? I know he has versatility to play both, but it seems like it might be a better fit for him to be in the slot more and more often.
Yeah, well, it's one of the reasons I like the Murphy signing, right? Because I think, and to your question, I don't know that they have a plan, right? No, regardless of what they say publicly of, oh, he's going to be the outside guy or he's going to be the slot. You would have to imagine this is the thing where they go into camp and then they see, and I think that will have more to do with the other guys that you brought up the names than it does with Murphy, because I think they know Murphy can either take over for Shannon Sullivan in the slot, or he could take over for Patrick Peterson on one of the sides. Yep. And you just have to see, is Booth ready to start? Is Caleb Evans ready to start? Do they have one of the other guys on the other side? And then we don't know the other pieces yet, right? Like Duke Shelley's still a free agent, or will they go out and get somebody else, yada, yada. But with Murphy, you know, one of those three, because now it's three starting cornerbacks, right, including the slot. You know that he has one of those spots on lock, and you also know he has the versatility to go into one. So I think it will just depend on the progression of the other guys. The thing I love about that fit is Flores loves the defensive backs. First of all, that run fit. Byron Murphy is a very enthusiastic run defender. Like, and this is something like that sort of tickled you when you were watching him at Washington, because a lot of times, you know, like in these months, you know, in past years, I go through all the film, you know, I go position by position. And a lot of these other cornerbacks that you're watching, even when the runs are coming to that side, they're like whispering to the receiver, just block me towards the sideline. I won't even try. But Byron Murphy's like, F that. You know, he's trying to shed and he's trying to get downhill and he wants to stick his shoulder into the running back. So you're going to get that. That will play up even more in the slot because obviously you're closer to the box. There's more runs coming that away. But either way, it's going to play. And then the other thing he was good at in Washington, and we've seen this in the NFL as well with Arizona, of if you send him as a blitzer, he's very skilled at that. And it's another thing that it's sort of work that he takes to. He likes attacking downhill and stuff like that. So all that stuff is really good fits. And he is a solid cornerback. So that part of it is too. The one question I have, this is really the only question I have, is – at Washington, they played a ton of zone. That's just what they did under Peterson and then Jimmy Lake. So it was a lot of zone concepts. I know that kid's really good in zone. And I also know that Flores uses some zone. But Flores uses way more man coverage and leaving the guy on an island than Ed Donatell almost never did that with his cornerbacks. So it'll be interesting to see in the man concepts, especially if Murphy's on the outside. And when Flores starts to do that crazy stuff he was doing with the Dolphins and, you know, with the Patriots as well before that, of sending seven guys or whatever, eight sometimes, you send the house. When you put Byron Murphy back in man coverage on an island, is he on the outside? If he's against a stud, is he going to be able to stay with him? That is my only question. Every other thing about it just fits totally. And you get him at the correct price point. Yeah. That's not us talking. All the national media was calling that signing a steal at the price point they got him right when it came.
Yeah, and I think the Vikings are just hoping that, you know, Davenport can get there quicker before the quarterback can even throw the ball in Murphy's direction. Which I'll even throw Josh Oliver in there, but like of the new additions that the Vikings have added so far, which one do you think has the chance to make the biggest impact in 2023?
Well, I probably have to say Murphy for that question, just because when you go from having, you know, one of the NFL's like five worst, you know, quarterback rooms or whatever, and now you're adding Murphy, like that's actually a legit dude. Right. So it, like, and he has all this diverse skill set, and a skill set, a lot of it, there's a couple of those things that I mentioned that we'll have to see on, but a lot of that skill set is tailor made for what Brian Flores does. So just in terms of the upgrade, the difference between what you're going to get from him and then the guys you otherwise would have had, that's why I'm going with him. But I think probably Davenport has the biggest upside, right? Because to me, Davenport's always been the guy. He's like, Adam, teenage pitcher, and he's in high school, and the kid can already throw over 90 miles per hour. Yeah. So he never had to learn how to throw the changeup, the breaking ball, whatever. He just, you know, flamethrower. But then as you go up in the level, you go to college, then you go into the minor leagues, whatever. It's like, yeah, you're going to need to develop a couple pitches, because even though your fastball is awesome, if guys can just sit dead red on that, they're going to square that thing up and they're going to start smacking you all over the yard. It's the same thing with Marcus Davenport. He's always had that enormous heater in that freight train thing I'm talking about, the north-south speed to power aspect of his game. Because of that, the offensive tackles have to sit back because they're already waiting back. They know he's coming off the line super quick. They know he's going to descend on him quick, get his hands on him quick, and then try to get around him with that stuff. So they're sitting back and then trying to anchor on it as well. If you can just throw in those counters or have a different initial plan where if they're sitting back too much on their heels initially, you can give them the fake to the outside and then you can loop back inside, different stuff like that. That's how his game could really jump up. So in terms of upside for that question, I'd say Davenport.
Yeah, I'm just thinking in my head when you were saying that, I'm like, can you imagine if he was able to work with someone like Andre Patterson, who was just notorious for developing guys like Everson Griffin, Danielle Hunter, you know, all those guys. And, you know, Patterson would have been in heaven just working with someone like Davenport, which, you know, he could still do well. I think Flores is probably going to make life actually probably pretty easy for him if he's blitzing six or seven guys. And he's probably just gonna be like, okay, just hit this hole as fast as you can. So I think that'll be very interesting to see. All right. So those are the new additions, but most of the Vikings like activity and free agency so far has been bringing guys back that were on the team last year that obviously they're not bringing back Thielen. They're not bringing back Kendricks. They did just do a contract restructure with Harrison Smith today to free up almost $7 million in cap space. So he will be back in 2023. We're still waiting on Za'Darius Smith and Dalvin Cook to see what they're going to do with those guys. But so far in the last few days, the Vikings have re-signed. Let's see. There's just a bunch. Quarterback Nick Mullins, center Garrett Bradbury, tight end Ben Ellefson, pass rusher Kenny Willekes.
I think at least from my memory from how it was pronounced in college. Tomato, yeah, Kenny Willekes.
Tomato, tomato. Yeah. Kicker Greg Joseph, long snapper Andrew DiPaola, running back Alexander Mattison, and like I mentioned, they restructured the contract of Harrison Smith. Now looking specifically at someone like Garrett Bradbury, who I think a lot of people thought like just let him go. We'll find something better. But he's back on a 3-year deal. I think it's around $15 million. So they're not breaking the bank or anything, but I just don't think a lot of people thought he was coming back. So are the Vikings making a mistake by bringing Bradbury back?
So I'm happy you keep me up for this. I have something to say to the state of Minnesota about this. No one has been more frustrated with especially the early seasons Garrett Bradbury than Thor. I like the times where he just gets ragdolled. Or I had a joke on Twitter about how Garrett Bradbury spends more time in Kirk Cousins' lap than his infant children. Oh, wow. I get all that stuff. The Dexter Lawrence joke about, no, you know, I get more hugs from you than my girlfriend. That sort of stuff. Look, I get all that. I get it. But people out there, you need to understand a couple of things. First off, the Vikings were as hamstrung as far as their movement coming into this offseason as any team in the NFL. Yeah. In fact, I think their ranking was either 31 or 32. Definitely might have been 32. In terms of both, there's an algorithm that somebody does where it's your projected cap space coming into the offseason plus your draft equity. And the Vikings were either 31 or 32. I can't remember.
Wait, but so it's effective cap space, I think you're talking about?
Yes, but plus this guy also adds the draft equity. So the Vikings only have the 5 draft picks. They do not have the second round pick via the TJ Hawkinson trade. they have the 2 fifth-rounders because one of them is the comp pick when they got when Gronklin signed with the Jets.
Yep.
So, like, you only have those picks. And then so whole point being you're very limited on the different stuff you can do because you just don't have the flexibility of some of these other franchises. Garrett Bradbury, while he has infuriated me just as much as everybody out there, you have to acknowledge the constraints that Kwesi was working under. And if you're like, get rid of Bradbury, get rid of Bradbury, you have to come up with an alternate plan of replacing Bradbury with at least an analogous player at the same amount of money that they're giving up to reacquire him.
Yeah.
Who's got that plan? Tell me, which player could they have gotten to go in that is just as good as Bradbury now to put in there at the price point they brought him back?
Yeah,
and knowing that his game jumped up this year a little bit, he's never going to be a stud, right? But like now, you know, if you just want to go PFF grades, I think before he was like low 60s, and then last year he jumps into the low 70s. At the price point they brought him back for, that is totally adequate. And he's a really good fit for the zone stuff that the Vikings already do.
Yeah.
So in terms of that, do I love Garrett Bradbury? No. Have I been frustrated by Garrett Bradbury? Yes. Do I ever think Garrett Bradbury is going to turn into like an all-pro center? Categorically not. But it was still smart to bring him back because you had the constraints. You were able to fit him in into this small delineation that you had for the center position. And you already know that he works with the other guys around him. So there's continuity to add there as well.
Yeah, and I think his contract, the way it's set up is, you know, if the Vikings wanted to use one of their third or fourth or whatever picks on a center, they can do that. And they also re-signed Austin Slotman today. So he's, you know, those two are back. And I think that probably has, you know, a lot to do with bring Kirk Cousins back, because they've made it very clear that Kirk Cousins is coming back for 2023. That's been pretty clear. As much as people want to throw out like the trade rumors and stuff, like maybe the Niners will want him or whatever, he's likely sticking around for at least one more season. So he has a, you know, that relationship, that center to quarterback relationship is huge. And we saw that with Chris Reed last year when he tried to go at center and things just didn't go that well. So, you know, bringing Bradbury back does have its advantages, but I also just, I'm like, great. I can't wait to see Kenny Clark throw him around again twice a year. And, you know, like you said, Dexter Lawrence, but, you know, maybe they can figure out some different ways to kind of combat that. And maybe, you know, getting something like a better running game will help kind of make that easier for Bradbury and make it not so he has to just get thrown around the whole game. He's still going to. But speaking of the running game, Alexander Mattison, he was brought back yesterday, I believe, on a 2-year deal worth around $8 million. Dalvin Cook's still on the team. I think he has a cap hit of about $14 million for 2023, which is too high. The Vikings know that. Everyone knows that. Sounds like the Vikings are trying to get rid of him, but and people are like, when are they going to trade him? Well, he did just have shoulder surgery, so I'm not so sure if he's going to pass a physical right now. So they're probably waiting. I would expect if they're going to trade him, it'd be closer to the draft. But, you know, what do you think the return of Alexander Mattison kind of signals? Does it signal that Dalvin Cook's probably closer to being out than returning for next season?
That's what I think, yeah. You know, it's just a tea leaf thing, and then you know the reports that they've gotten trade offers on him. They're at least listening to trade offers on Dalvin. And again, going back to the thing of the constraints that you have as far as both draft picks and the cap space, it wouldn't make sense to pay the backup what they did to Mattison if it's just going to be like you're bringing Dalvin back too. You add the two cap numbers together. A team that's as hamstrung as the Vikings, they can't afford that. So I'm
would
just
Mattison even come back? Would he even come back if they're like, oh, we're going to keep Dalvin too? Like, would he even do that?
Maybe. I mean, like, Mattison definitely might have had a tepid market. I think that's why the numbers were a little bit less. And it's fair for like a 1B or a, you know, RB2, like the number that he got, whatever. But to me, like, what makes most sense about that is you already know that you have offers in hand for Dalvin. You're going to be able to trade Dalvin. Yeah. Might not be today, might not be tomorrow. Like you said, definitely might be closer to April or, you know, the end of April, end of next month with teams wanting to see Dalvin's physical, the MRIs, different stuff like that. But it wouldn't make sense to me if it's just, we're bringing him back just to be the backup to Dalvin because of the cat space thing that we talked about. But if you think about it as, they've already decided that they're going to trade Dalvin. Let's say that they know that they can get minimum, let's say, fourth round pick. Like, even if things aren't great, right? Like, you know, whatever, or the other team, they need to wait a little bit longer, whatever. But you can get the fourth round pick. Well, if you have Mattison now, you use a middle round pick on a running back. And now the running back room makes sense. And it's the amount of money that you would want to delineate to that position if you're a team that's super hamstrung with your cap situation. At that point, let's say you can use only a fourth rounder, right? Because they have the third rounder, no second rounder, like we already mentioned. And then day three is where you have the, at this point, you have three picks there. But if you trade a Delvin, you're going to get another one. Perhaps Kwesi intends to trade down out of the first, you know, down in the first round or out of the first round again. You can add some more picks, whatever. If you can just add a fourth round running back, this running back class is very good. You have the stud in Bijan. That's tier one. Then you have a legitimate tier two, in my opinion, that's Zach Charbonnet of UCLA and Jahmyr Gibbs of Alabama. But it's not just that, where you have the surefire round one running back prospect, which we don't get every year. And you also have a couple legit round two prospects, but you also have fleshed out tiers beneath them. The depth of this running back class is very, very good. And it's one of those things where you get down the board into day three, you have a running back in the draft for every sort of taste. You have the airback types, you have the bigger hammers, the early down type guys. You have all these different things. It's a deeper running back class than we've seen in recent years. Even delineating a fourth round pick to that, it's going to be a guy that can get on the field right away. Yeah. If you mix and match that guy with Madison's skill set, and Madison can do stuff, right? Like last year, I know people are down on him right now because last year was a little bit down. But like, you know, the years before that, and certainly at Boise State, he showed that the skill set that he can do. He's never going to be a burner. You know, he's a bit of a plotter, but he's sort of like the body type thing. It's not going to work quite as well. But like, it's sort of like for Vikings fans, like Leroy Horde plus a bit of a receiving utility. Yeah. You know, the Leroy Horde thing of, if you need 1 yard, I'll get you 3 yards. If you need 5 yards, I'll get you 3 yards.
Yeah.
So, sort of like Madison. He's reliable in terms of that. But then also you get the soft hands and stuff like that, the utility out of the backfield. You just don't get the explosive plays. What kind of a back could they pick in round four, maybe even round five, they could complement with him when you're also thinking about Ty Chandler mixing in there? I think they could, you know, and Nwangu, I don't know if he could get up into that rotation right away. But just those three guys, I think that they're going to be able to mix and match as far as thinking about these different prospects of which running back prospect in this very deep class in, say, round four, could we get that could complement the skill sets of the other two guys really well? I think they're going to be able to do that and cobble together a backfield that maybe not quite as effective as last year, Delvin, but definitely not too far off. And for the money, would be an upgrade when you're adding the two things together.
Yeah, as you were talking, I'm in my head, I'm like, what if they trade Delvin and they draft Bijan Robinson? I'm like, would Kwesi do that? And then you're talking about the depth of the class. I'm like, that would be.
I'd be down for Bijan where they were if they had more resources. That's the only problem with giving them the wrong. Yeah, because, you know, for instance, the wide receiver on the other side of Justin Jefferson, you have to get someone there where the defenses can't just wanton double and bracket Jefferson at will. So they need that other receiver. Obviously, you've moved on from Thielen. And then, you know, other positions is defensive positions where, you know, whatever, delineate that. But I think on the cheap, they can cobble this thing together, even if, you know, if and when they trade Delvin Cook.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be very surprised if they stay at 23 and if they actually even have a pick in the first.
Mike Rowe here with a radical idea. If you want to see more companies make more things in this country, buy more things from more companies who make things in this country. I refer in this case to the incredible t-shirts, sweatshirts, blue jeans, and more made by my friends at American Giant. Everything American Giant makes is made in the United States. And right now, you can take 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com/Mike. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic. So now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Because I think Kwesi's either going to trade to the very bottom of the first round, or he's going to try to get into the first part of the second round and get some more picks. Because, you know, after what we saw last year of him just... what do you have? He's like doing a Rick Spielman impression. They had like 10 trades. And everyone's like, what are you doing? We're like, we thought we got rid of this. But no. But yeah, Madison's coming back. Ty Chandler. Like, look at someone like Isaiah Pacheco, drafted in what, the seventh round last year? Yep. Chiefs.
Yes.
Helped them win the Super Bowl. Like, you're going to be able to find somebody. And it's been that way for years. And I'm pretty sure this current regime realizes that they don't have to pay top dollar to get, you know, good production out of a running back. And even just having one running back, it's just not how it goes in the NFL anymore. It's more common to have that committee. And I think that's what they're probably leaning towards, to just keep guys more fresh. All right. Last topic on the guys that they just brought back. This is a little surprising. They brought back Greg Joseph. It's a 1-year deal. It's only $2 million. Can probably move on from him still. But he missed 13 kicks last year. That's not good. I think he was like 27th in field goal percentage. He made some clutch kicks. I will give him that. But he missed a bunch too. And we know the relationship the Vikings fans have with kickers. I think Matt Gay was like probably what the top free agent this year, and he signed with like the Colts or something. So I think maybe as soon as he went off the board, the Vikings were like, all right, we got to bring Joseph back. But do you believe that Greg Joseph will open the 2023 season as the Vikings starting kicker, or do you think they'll draft someone, sign an unsigned free agent, or even maybe sign someone before then to try and see what they can do?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to bring in a camp competition guy, but I don't think it's going to be they're not putting any more resources into that. So you're going to get the classic thing of, you know, the third or fourth best UDFA kicker.
Who'd they have last year, the Oklahoma kid?
Oh, Gabe Bursich.
Yeah.
Who had the second best mustache at last year's combine behind Greg Dulcich. Those were the two top mustache guys. But yeah, they're going to sign somebody in exactly of Bursich's ilk and then bring him in, whatever. But I think they're just conceding. We're giving Joseph the job. And like you bring up Gay. Matt Gay signs for the highest money in NFL history as a kicker. And like, would the Vikings love to have Matt Gay? Would the Vikings love to have an all-pro center every year? Yes. Right. Like you want the best player at every single position. But again, this is like a Tetris thing where you have to fit all the different pieces with the constraints that you have. And they just didn't have the cap room to go out and sign a better kicker. So they bring back Greg Joseph. I think it's a bit begrudgingly, and that they might have brought back Bradbury begrudgingly, maybe even Madison begrudgingly. Yeah. But they were guys that they knew that fit in their system that also fit within the price point that they needed to pay.
And they're sticking with the theme because Madison is around 25, Bradbury is around 25. It seems to be the theme of most of the signings that Kwesi's made this offseason, except for the restructure of what Harrison Smith, who's 90. Now, you know, going on his 70th season in the NFL. No, 12th, I believe now. He started in 2012, and I think he's 34. So he's up there, but he's like I was looking at his, because I was writing about him today because of the restructure, and I was looking at his PFF grades, and like three of the last 4 years, he's in like the top 15 for safeties, and then last year he was like 39. I'm like, I can't believe that has more to do with his actual play than it did more of the scheme. So I'm like, I'm going to give him a pass for that one because pretty much everyone sucked under Ed Donatell, and it wasn't really in their control. But yeah, so they brought back all those guys. And the other pretty interesting thing that the Vikings did this week was execute a cap conversion to Kirk Cousins' contract. This is not an extension. They added some void years, but this is not, you know, extending Kirk Cousins. They created more than $16 million in cap space this year by shuffling some of his, you know, remaining money around, which also did increase the amount of dead cap Minnesota will be left over with next year in 2024 if Cousins is no longer on the team. You know, this might not have been their first choice, but they're also currently scheduled to have more than, what, like almost $100 million in cap space, if not more, next year. So they probably figured, okay, we can handle this, whatever, we'll figure it out. But you know, with this cap conversion and currently no contract extension in place for Kirk Cousins, what do you think this move tells us about Cousins' future with the Vikings?
Well, if nothing else, and this is just straightforward, this is not an interpretation, it indicates a lack of desire to extend him. And I certainly support that decision. You're in this weird sort of, they were in this as well last year, where you're in this weird sort of middle spot of like, we need cap room so that we can field the competitive team because we have holes on the roster and we don't have enough draft picks or cap room to do it. So we need some of that money back from Kirk in order so that we can put a team around him. Last year they decided to extend him. This year, I agree with this decision too. It's like, you know, the three-dimensional chess thing, and what they've essentially what they've done is they're deferring some of this year's cap hit. It's not that you get away from it. It's just you're deferring it into these future years. So you have the option then after this season to move on from Cousins and or, you know, use him as trade bait if you're able to put the franchise, you know, like that. But like they probably just let him walk and then you get a comp pick for him, whatever. I don't know if it's a concern, but like the bill does come, you know, just because you're taking the money off this year's books, it doesn't mean that it completely goes away. Right. But like we're talking about, they were in a sticky spot with the cap situation this year. So until they get out of that, you have to do some of these gymnastics. I think that the thing for short term that this indicates, I mean, not only that they want to play this year out with Kirk Cousins, and there is a much better chance that next year they're moving on from Cousins than any year before it. Because every year we talk about, oh, trade Cousins and do this, move on from Cousins, all this different stuff. But there was never actually any true indication that was going to happen. This is the first indication that we have that, like, we're looking towards the future. Yep. Cousins may not be here the year after this coming season, whatever. But I think, like, short term, something to watch for. I didn't think before that there was a very good chance that they could draft a quarterback like mid to late rounds, mostly because of the lack of draft picks that we're talking about. But you do something like this where now you don't have that contingency plan going forward. They re-sign Nick Mullins. He's going to be the QB2, but he ain't never going to be more than the QB2. So if you want that quarterback of the future, maybe you end up, well, it, not a guy for sure that would start, but at least a guy that you could develop for a year and see. Cross your fingers, hope you get a Brock Purdy, like something like that. Mm-hmm. I think there's a much better shot today that the Vikings draft a day three quarterback than I would have answered 2 weeks ago.
Oh, day three. So like, what's that, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh?
Exactly. Right? Yeah. And the reason I say that is just because certainly they're not going to take a first round quarterback, and none of the top four, right. The consensus top four, no one's going to fall down there anyway. So it'd be an enormous reach if you took either of the, there's two guys that I see as day two guys, you know, top four. I'm talking about just for people that it, you know, Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, Anthony Richardson, and Will Levis. And then, so you have that tier right there. Those guys actually may end up being picks 1, 2, 3, 4. All that it requires at this point is the Cardinals to trade. Cardinals trade with the Raiders. You're getting four quarterbacks with the first four picks.
They should. Just, they need everything.
This is what it is. So. Exactly. But like, you know, after that, you have this drop where you're not going to see a quarterback drafted again until Friday night. And the two guys that I think are going on day two, it's Hendon Hooker of Tennessee. Yep. And then the guy that I actually rank slightly above him, Stanford's Tanner McKee. I think you're going to see those two guys. I don't think another quarterback is even getting into round three, because after that, you have another drop, and then you're down in the range of like Jake Haener, Aiden O'Connell, like different guys like that, where it's, you know, and then some guys that I don't like at all that I hope the Vikings don't end up with, Jaren Hall at BYU. I don't like him. Don't like Max Duggan at TCU, like some of those guys. But anyhow, those guys are all day three guys. I don't think the Vikings right now, they only have the one later round three pick. They don't have a round two pick. So in order to get in the range for either Hooker or McKee, like I don't know that either of them gets to their third round pick. So that's where you'd have to have the trade down thing. The math of it just doesn't make sense to me personally. I think what would be more plausible is a day three pick, you know, whether it's a fourth round, fifth round, something like that. And there are guys in there that you can take. That you can at least sort not project as a Brock Purdy, but project as a guy that you can bring in that can run your system, isn't going to make mistakes, probably will have, not probably, will have physical limitations that led to him dropping to that point. But like, for instance, Jake Haener from Fresno State, his game is not too dissimilar from Brock Purdy himself. Does that mean he's Brock Purdy? No, nobody knew. If people knew that Brock Purdy's Brock Purdy, he wouldn't have been the last friggin' pick in the last draft. Brock Purdy would have gone undrafted were it not for the San Francisco 49ers. The other 31 NFL teams said this kid's not draftable. But like, you know, Jake Haener has the skill set that's closest to him. And the guy that I would advocate for on day three, and I'm not just saying this because it will be so damn cute if it happens, is Aiden O'Connell of Purdue. Because then you have the Kevin O'Connell, Aiden O'Connell, you'd have the learning tree. O'Connell's putting his arm around O'Connell. It'd be like the son he never had there, the teaching of the quarterback thing. But Aiden O'Connell, it's not just the last name thing. I actually have him as quarterback 7. So I have him behind, you know, like I talked about the tier. And then I have O'Connell as the next. There is a drop there, of course. Aiden O'Connell, you know, it's like who's on first with all these O'Connells. But Aiden O'Connell, like, there's aspects of his game that I think the Vikings would be attracted to. He's not quite as, like Jake Haner's not a great athlete, but he can at least move around a little bit, throw on the run, whatnot. Aiden O'Connell's more set in the pocket, but Aiden O'Connell, of those guys past the top six, he is the most technically refined of them. And I'm not even sure that it's close. Aiden O'Connell had gone to Purdue and he walked onto the team. And then he was on this team where Jeff Brohm was the coach. And Jeff Brohm, for people that don't know Jeff Brohm, former quarterback, he was the guy that he has all these famous quotes when he was playing in the XFL. Because like one week he got concussed on this, just the nastiest hit you'll ever see. And then he's back the next week playing. And he's like, you know, do I have a pulse? And is this the XFL?
Is he Aaron Rodgers coach at Cal? Is that the same guy or is it somebody else?
Brohm, maybe that's cool. That's a deep cut going back. I don't know if he was at Cal back then. Maybe he might have been, but like, but yeah, like at, you know, at Purdue, like the basically Brohm, you know, and his brother Brian, that's one connection with Aaron Rodgers is the Brian Brohm, Aaron Rodgers thing. I don't know if Jeff ever, he could, I'd have to look back on that, but, Jeff Brohm, he was this like, you know, 6'3" pocket passer guy, didn't move around a ton. But he was super technically refined, and he passed all that stuff on to Aiden O'Connell. Aiden O'Connell basically just saw this see it, pitch it kind of guy,
yeah.
Where, like, again, this is something you even harp on is you watch a lot of these other kids' tape, or you observe them when you're down in Mobile. They don't have, like, even when they've been taught, like, hey, Jaren Hall, you're going to be more accurate when your shoulders are squared to the target, and when, you know, you're sort of perpendicular going up and down, and then you distribute your weight and whatnot. But like, even though, you know, you teach the kid over and over and over and over again, and he can understand when the bullets start flying, there's some, they just, it eschews the whole thing. Like Jaren Hall, you will never get him to marry his top half to his lower half. There's a lot of times where he's not throwing with his feet set. A lot of times where he's throwing from these crazy arm angles. Will Levis is an example of a guy. He doesn't even need pressure in his face to just totally eschew the mechanics. He knows better. He just can't help himself. Like, he'll just be there like that. Oh, and he'll just flick the thing. And sometimes he just drops dimes because his arm's so talented. But there's other times where he misses a wide open dude that's like 5 yards away from him because he's like, you know, just flicks it or whatever. Aiden O'Connell I was going to say the word diligent. I don't even think that goes far enough. He will have his mechanics correct every single time. He knows what the play and the concept calls for every single time. Invariably, he makes the correct decision every time. The issue with Aiden O'Connell, not athletic. He's not leaving the pocket. He lives in the pocket. And the other thing is he doesn't have a howitzer for an arm. He has decent size. You know, it's you know, I think 6'3", 215, like something like that. But he doesn't have that howitzer for an arm. But he's very accurate short, very accurate intermediate. So, like, the defense has to be very concerned with him going across there, out to there. If you go too far down the field, that's where he has to start heaving his whole body into throws. And what you run the risk of is the ball fluttering up in the air at that point, because he's got to kind of try to lollipop it with all of his might, whatnot. And the accuracy becomes a little bit wonky, but he knows his limitations, right? Like, and that's what you want from guys like Jaren Hall is a guy that does not understand his limitations whatsoever. Like, he's like a child who is given a bazooka, sort of, like, you know, he's just shooting it all over the place. But like with Aiden O'Connell, he knows exactly what his limitations are. He knows exactly what his job is, and he's not making mistakes. And when you pair a kind of guy like that with a really good coaching staff, that's where you get the manifestation of a Brock Purdy, where it's like, you're just going to do what you're told. You know exactly what the concept is. You know, if the defense does this right after that, your read switches immediately to that guy. His eyes are like, boom, 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 making the decision. So even though he has the limitations physically, there is no limitation mentally with that stuff. So he can stay click, click, click with the defense in terms of that.
I'll tell you what, I feel a lot better about this coaching staff drafting a quarterback than I did the previous one. You know,
amen.
They wouldn't probably have touched Kellen Mond, you know, a couple of years ago.
Agreed.
In the third round.
Agreed.
They probably would have gone after you know what, Davis Mills.
I agree with that too. Yeah.
So that's not because he's better. We know that now, but I just think like he would have fit their system more. I did see that they have met. I think it might have been the combine. They met with Dorian Thompson Robinson from UCLA. So that might be someone to keep an eye on for day three as well.
And he'd be that O'Connell. If Aiden O'Connell, he probably, I don't know if he'd go fourth round, but I don't believe he's getting beyond the fifth, just because you have that cost certainty of those elements of the game that I'm talking about. Robinson is the guy where, let's say you miss out on Haner and O'Connell in that, you know, fourth, fifth thing. They just miss out on those guys. Thompson Robinson is a guy that I would target once it gets sixth, certainly seventh. I don't know that Thompson Robinson gets down there, but Thompson Robinson, what you like about him, he's a leader. He's a warrior. Like, that kid went out on the sword every single game. He's a really, really good athlete, and he's got some zip in that arm. Like, he surprised some people because he matched, I think it was Will Levis, in terms of at the combine, they do the thing where you throw it into the
ball speed. Yeah.
Yeah. The velocity. I believe Thompson Robinson tied, I could be wrong, but I think that's the guy he tied with, but he tied for number one in terms of the exit velocity. But he's always had that pop with the velocity, you know, being able to toss into windows. The thing that they would need to work on with him, it's the accuracy, and it's also just the feel in the pocket. Like, as you know, Chip Kelly, his system, you know, even go back to Oregon, whatnot.
Bang, bang, boom.
Exactly. It's not this. It's, I don't want to say the complete opposite of what Brom's doing, but very dissimilar, where Brom wants you to win from the pocket. So you're not getting on the field at Purdue unless you are a technician, unless you know the answer to every question within the pocket and what to do with when that answer isn't there. Thompson Robinson and Chip Kelly's system more, it's breakneck speed. It's looking for those huge plays, whatnot. They're willing to take a lot more risks, and something that wasn't developed as much with Dorian Thompson Robinson's game. It was just sitting in the pocket and making those decisions, but he has physical skills that, for instance, Aiden O'Connell doesn't. So that would be an interesting guy.
He's small though, too, right?
He is. Yeah. He was, I believe he checked in at, hold on, I can pull it up. It's 6'1".
Oh.
He checked in 6'1.5", but 191, so a little bit on the lighter side.
Well, he's bigger than what? CJ Stroud? Or not Stroud, Bryce Young.
Way bigger than Bryce Young, yes.
So, you know. And then I was just thinking in the back of my head, who has had success in the NFL after being in Chip Kelly's system in college? And Mariota's still in the league, or not, I guess he's not anymore.
No, he is, right? Because he was on Atlanta, right?
He got released, though. By the Falcons. So he doesn't have a job right now. I'm sure he will get somewhere.
I'm trying to think
the
about
best, this. You know, I guess.
Another guy was Dennis Dixon. We can't really blame Dennis Dixon because he blew his knee out 1 year, so that might have contributed to that. But
Herbert wasn't in there, right?
Kelly, no, was Herbert, right? Herbert was with the guy afterwards. Was it Helfrich? I think of Mark Helfrich.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't know if Kelly was there long enough to be involved in Herbert's recruiting, but yeah, Herbert wasn't, it wasn't with Chip Kelly.
Yeah. I can't think of anybody. So maybe, you know, maybe it's different now, but yeah, that would worry me a little bit. Last thing before we get you out here, what do you think has a better chance? The Vikings trading up in the first round to get a quarterback, or the Vikings trading into the second round and taking a quarterback?
Definitely. Well, I think the odds are definitely better that they trade down than they trade up. And to trade up to get one of the quarterbacks, it's possible you'd have to get in the top four. That would be beyond cost prohibitive from where they are, because you'd have to trade at least two future first round picks, et cetera, et cetera. Kwesi is too analytically inclined to do that. As far as like trading down, I think that you and I agree that is extremely plausible.
Yeah.
I don't know though if they did that. I don't think there's any scenario where they use their first pick, wherever it is, on a quarterback. Like, I would bet a lot of money against that. But I think that there's, you know, trading down with the idea of we need to accumulate extra picks because you've already earmarked one of those extra picks for the quarterback position. That's what I think is plausible. And yeah, I do think there's a solid chance of that.
Yeah. I think it's two. They're at 23. And like you said, those quarterbacks, all four of them go in the top four. So that's just, it's nice to think. And everyone's like, oh, you know, just do what the Chiefs did and trade up just like they did for Mahomes. And it's like, I think they traded from like, what was it, like 17 or 18 to 10. So like,
yeah, it wasn't like crazy way up.
Yeah. They didn't go up 20 picks to get a quarterback. And
exactly.
And if you're doing that, teams know what you're doing, and they're going to try and take advantage of it. Now, and Kwesi, I think, is smart enough to not get taken advantage of. But, you know, I think that, yeah, like you said, it's too far unless they somehow get, I don't even know who they could trade. They don't have anyone to trade for a first round pick unless it's like Danielle Hunter. I don't even know if he would get one because of his contract right now or whatever. I guess what, Justin Jefferson or Christian Darrisaw will get you. Definitely get your first round picks, but they're not going anywhere.
If they trade one of those two guys, I'm moving out of Minnesota. I've lived here all my life. I'll be leaving then.
So
I'll follow Justin wherever he goes.
Yeah. So I don't think that's going to happen, unfortunately. But, you know, I still think it'll be exciting. I think, you know, there's going to be a lot of trades and stuff. And And who knows what they could do still in free agency as far as trades and signing guys and stuff. So lots of excitement still playing this offseason. There's lots of stuff going on. That's going to be it for today. Thor, thanks for joining. Where can people find your stuff? Because, you know, you're all over the place these days.
You can find me on Twitter at ThorKU. You can find my my written content and stuff like that. And a lot of shows now. I have an NFL draft show every Tuesday for fantasy pros and betting pros. And then also you mentioned Score North. I do did a twice weekly show in the fall. Now we're doing a once weekly draft specific Viking show that is on every Tuesday. It comes out early afternoon. So super fun doing that with Phil and Judd and Declan and the whole crew.
Lots of, I think I listened to the last episode, lots of pushing of the football button.
Oh, yeah.
With all those terms in there. Lots of that. So, yeah.
Oh, we jump into the weeds and, you know, we can position by position and scheme fits. And if you love Vikings minutia and draft related minutia, stuff like that, check that show out.
Yeah, for sure. Check it out. Check out all his stuff. Does great work. If you're watching this on YouTube, make sure to subscribe to our channel, like this video, follow the Viking Age on Twitter and Facebook, and this podcast will be, the audio version of this podcast will be available in the morning on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeart, wherever you get your podcast. But until next time, I and Chris will probably be back for Monday, I'm thinking. So we will talk to you later. All right. Bye.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.